but it's actually quite important to find that out earlier doors, because it might be it's actually not an option. Welcome back to the Commercial Property Investor Podcast, and I'm your host, Jerry Alexander. Okay, so I want to talk today about some of the costs. So this is a bit more specific. This is about buying buildings, maybe your first commercial building, and just giving you an idea of some of the key costs you need to think about. So if you're coming from resi, sure, there's some numbers there that you already know about. So for instance, land and buildings tax or stamp, depending where you are, the title searches, maybe how much the finance fee is going to be, stuff like that. But there's actually a bit more to it on commercial. Some of them are similar, but there are some other ones that you need to think about. So what I thought I would do is just go through a bit of a list, really, of some of the costs that you need to think about when you're looking at the actual buying process of a building. Now, it's not really about operational costs or ongoing costs, but I am going to touch on a couple that you can investigate early on in the process so that you just get a handle on whether that's going to be problematic once you've bought the building. So when you're estimating how much it's going to cost you to buy a building, sure, you need to know the buying price, right? But there's a lot of other things. So one of the key ones that a lot of people actually forget about, and if they're working with the same advisors they do with residential, their advisors may not necessarily bring this up until the last minute when they remember, it's actually the big one's VAT. So yeah, some buildings, commercial buildings, are not VAT registered, but a lot of them are, particularly ones of a bit more of a size. So that means basically if your building's for sale for, let's say, £500,000 £500,000, then in the UK, certainly, you're going to get value-added tax charged on that if the building is elected to tax. So that's an additional 20%. So if the building costs £500,000, you're now going to have to pay out another £100,000 in VAT. Now, there's a lot of nuances there. I may have touched this on a podcast before, but the VAT itself, if you are VAT registered or your business or whatever is buying the building, then you will be able to claim that VAT back. Now, if the seller hasn't elected to tax that building, which is a question you need to ask, they can't charge VAT for it. So actually, if you buy it for £500,000, there's no VAT to be charged. But if they've done a lot of redevelopment work in the building and they wanted to claim back some of that 20% during that process, they may have elected to tax the building, which means that VAT will apply. Electing to tax isn't too difficult, but taking something out of VATed nature is very difficult. So what does that mean for you? Well, if you buy the building and the other side doesn't agree or believe is a trading as a going concern, which I'm going to come back to, then they will charge you VAT. Now, you need to be VAT registered. You go through your 3 month or whatever it is period that you work on, you claim it back. But it does mean you need to find that extra £100,000 if the building's costing you £500,000. And you probably need to finance it. Now, there are specific loans that are VAT-related loans that last for maybe 4 months. You need to prove that HMRC is going to pay it back, all that sort of stuff. But that there is possibility of getting around that, which I've done. But also another method that we've done is trading as a going concern. So if the building itself is operating, particularly if it's got two or three different tenants, it's almost treated as a business. And as long as HMRC agree, what might actually happen is, in reality, when you do the deal, sure, the VAT needs to be accounted for, but it's not actually paid and then reclaimed. So there are ways around it. But nevertheless, this is about buying costs and some of the ones that might not necessarily be there were resi. And that's one, that's a big one you need to work out. It's tricky to navigate, but definitely possible. But what you don't want is that one jumping at you in the very last step of the process. So you need to make sure that your lawyer or your solicitor, whoever, has worked out whether this and confirmed whether this thing is VAT registered. If it is VAT registered, you're not, then you're going to need to get yourself or your entity that's buying the building VAT registered so you can then claim that back. Right, next one, land and buildings tax. So in the UK, in Scotland, we have a tax for buying buildings, right? We've got a tax for everything. As soon as you blow your nose, you have to pay money for it, right? But so basically this one is if you buy a building, there's some tax due on the overall price that's paid. And it's a progressive tax. It goes up. It starts off at a higher level than resi. So what might in resi be a reasonably large land and buildings tax bill for, say, a £250,000, £300,000 building, whatever it is, in commercial, it slightly starts off less. However, one of the little nuances is when you're buying that building, if VAT is being applied, they will actually tax you for the VAT element as well. So it's a nice double tax there. Thank you very much. So when you're calculating your land and buildings tax, your stamp, whatever, your purchase VAT, then you need to add that VAT into that number. You can't just say it's 500,000. You've actually got to put in 600,000 into the calculator. Pain. But that's one of those ones I don't think is going to be going anytime soon. Okay, so lawyer fee. Obviously, you're going to need a lawyer fee or solicitor fee to buy it. But also, depending on the deal and the deal size, you'll also have to pay for the bank's lawyer who acts on their behalf, and you get charged for it. Thank you very much. And depending on the bank and the lawyer, if the building costs more than, say, £1 million, I don't remember the exact number, but you might need, with some banks, they might need you to have two separate legal firms. You can't use the same firm to do the work for the bank and for you. And there's a time consideration on that, because one of them's working for you and then the other side is working for the other side, but you're kind of paying. It's a bit odd. But basically, it's that situation where, unfortunately, there's that no man's land between lawyers when you're trying to get these things over the line. So it's a time consideration there, which does lead on to other costs that you might need to think about. And when you do the transaction, the lawyer will do their various searches, title search, all that stuff, up-to-date things that need to go in to make sure the deal works. And of course, if you're borrowing money, there's going to be a finance fee or a bank loan fee that you're going to have to factor into that. Again, you'll be used to that with resi, right? But there are sometimes little nuances there too, depending on the amount that you're going for, and whether it's private finance or bank finance. And in particular with bank finance these days, and even in the past, you may have to pay for accountant projections. So basically, this is a cash flow statement, probably a P&L on the balance sheet. And to be honest, my hair starts frizzing when I'm going through these sorts of things when we're doing finance applications. So I try and get other people to help me, but it costs money. And sometimes you might have the best business plan in the world, but the bank's not going to listen to you because it's not rubber stamped by a professional accountant. So there's another little fee there to think about if you're looking at buying a commercial building that's got some projections needed. You're maybe doing some development, so it's not as straightforward as buying a product that's already got a tenant in it, which is a bit easier to show and project out. Okay, so there's architectural initial feasibility study or feasibility fees that you might need to think about when you're looking at a property and you're thinking, is this one going to work for me? You might want to just get somebody in to look at it and give you some initial feasibility ideas. That might cost you some money. And this is all things that you may well have to pay for in addition to the bank loan, right? Now, there might be some bank loan fee might be added on, but a lot of these things are other little bits that aren't necessarily always thought about when you think, right, I need a deposit of X amount, but actually you need a deposit plus all this stuff. And the other one, which I've spoken about before, is the survey. The bank will instruct the survey, not you, if you're using a financial institution to do this. And they will get another independent one if you have already done it yourself. It's one that catches people out, particularly at the start. You instruct, you want to do the right thing. You want to find out how much this building's going to be worth. You want to get a valuation and perhaps even a building survey. The bank is going to want somebody else to do it because that particular survey was done on your behalf and they want something that's independent. So they're going to charge you for it, and it's going to be basically twice. And you, as I say, I mentioned about building survey, you might want to pay for that too, because that, if you're still relatively new to this, you may want to make sure the structure of the building, et cetera, is in good condition. Therefore, there's a little bit more to shell out, and it would certainly be more than you would get in a residential property, or you would have to pay in a residential. So, I mean, it's definitely in the four figures, that's for sure, might be more. And another one which we've come come across before is it an international sale? Is the entity that's selling this building based in the UK or is it based somewhere else? If it's based somewhere else, there's some extra additional costs there that you need to think about with the lawyer. Apart from anything else, one of the oddities is the party selling the building, can they need to prove it's theirs to sell? And I guess that's an obvious thing, even in the UK or in your own country, that somebody can prove they can sell it, but that's title deeds and things. But there's this thing about international sales if the property is owned by a company that's in the Virgin Islands. Let me take a moment to thank Office R&D for supporting the podcast. It's really important to us that we only work with sponsors that we've used ourselves. It's all about being authentic, right? Office R&D is the best flexible workspace platform we've come across, and believe me, we've tried a few systems over the last 20 years. Office R&D helps us manage our invoicing, customer community, reporting, building access, and many more aspects of our day-to-day operations. Why not book yourself a free demo to see how they can help you free up more time to grow your business? Follow the partner link in the show notes.
Islands or Barbados or something, then actually you may have to pay some money to make sure that locally in that jurisdiction, they can prove that the building's for them to sell to you. And that generally is at your cost, depending on where your negotiations are going with the seller. If you've worked with an agent to find this building, or indeed you've just had somebody in the industry that's found this building for you and there's going to be a fee, that is not going to come out of your bank loan. That's going to have to be something else you're going to have to add in there. And of course, the one that I'm surprised how many people forget about, particularly if they're not using bank finance, is insurance. Deal goes over the line, money gets paid, and then is it insured? Forgot. So you need to remember there's going to be an insurance cost. It needs to be up front. If you don't have a tenant, then that is not going to be reclaimable until you've got a tenant. Now, sometimes you can put finance insurance, particularly if it's a larger deal. Let's say the insurance is a few thousand pounds. If it's empty and vacant, it may be maybe several thousand pounds, maybe even tens of thousands. But that number doesn't have to necessarily be paid all up front. You could probably put finance on that to pay it off over the year, but it is a cost to think about, particularly if you're doing redevelopment, because you're not going to get that refunded through customers until you've got the space ready and let out. And I mentioned finance cost. One of the other ones, which is, I guess, not upfront cost, but something to bear in mind, is the run over or the overrun costs on finance, because these things invariably take longer than you think. So, yeah. What's going to be the overrun cost? And if you've gone for finance to buy the building and finance to redevelop it, can you draw down the redevelopment or do you need to have it all at day one? Is it basically as soon as you've signed the line, you've got the loan, bang, you've got to start paying interest on it? Ideally, it'd be one that you could draw down as you need it. But it's just one of those other little numbers to add in. Technically, I guess that's not something to add in on the day of the purchase, unless your finance is particularly difficult. But then just moving on from that to one or two ongoing costs that it would be good to know about beforehand. One would be the utilities aspect. Now, ideally, if this is a multi-let, you might get some operational data from the previous, from the seller, who might give you some ideas on how much utilities have cost. I got to take out a pinch of salt, but that would help. But one of the things that's particularly becoming relevant after the energy crisis recently is the size of the meters. Because we used to pay, I don't know, sometimes under £1 a day for the meter. Now some meters are £12-13 a day for big meters. And they base it on the size. So if you've bought or you're buying an old building and there was a lot of industrial process going on in that building years past, there might be a monster meter. You don't necessarily need it for what you're going to be using in the building for, but actually the utility companies will charge you a standing charge based on the size of your meter, and they won't take it out. At least we haven't managed to get any of them to take them out and give us a meter that's more befitting the current use of the building. There's probably ways around that. We haven't had those arguments, but it's just something to be aware of. It's something I'm looking at when I'm looking at those older properties. If they've been used for something that has a high energy consumption in the past, I know that that meter is going to cost me quite a lot. It might not be a deal breaker, but it's something to be aware of, and it's something you can get into your ongoing costs and your deal analysis up front by just having a check on what size those meters are. The other one is the cost of fibre. And I did do a couple of podcasts before, actually, about, what sort of costs and things should you think about after the purchase, right? So that was something that we did. It was also, I did one about, just thinking this through, yeah, about a purchase checklist. So, and I think there's actually a physical checklist on the website. I'm not 100% sure, but certainly we've had one in the past. If it's not there, you can reach out to us and we'll send it over to you. But basically, that wasn't necessarily numbers. It was more about, right, okay, you've bought the building. What do you do next, right? And that can be quite useful when you're just getting started trying to work out what's going on. And then the after the purchase kind of strategies, what should you do next? We've also done a podcast on that. But this one, as I say, is more about the cost. And one of those future costs that you need to look at is fibre. And I brought up those other ones because I know I've spoken about fibre before, but fibre takes quite a long time to get in. Fibre, depending on where you are compared with the exchange, can be more expensive. So if you're in a more rural location, how far away is the exchange? And you know what? You're not going to be able to, well, I can't work out what the cost is going to be by working out with exchanges, but my point here is get quotes. Get a quote. Give, like I've had Tony Freef on the podcast before, and it's one or two others that we work with that'll be able to give you, if you give them the postcode, they'll be able to tell you, right, here's quotes on how much it's going to cost for a 100 meg line, a gigabit line, whatever number that you think you need. But it's actually quite important to find that out early doors, because it might be it's actually not an option, because it's too expensive. So then you have to start looking at other forms of communications, and it just can get a bit more complex. And actually, for a phone call or an email, it's something just to tick off the list. And then the last one I've got here, which is again about an ongoing cost and something that we really need to think about, of course, is business rates. So you should, if you're buying secondhand building that's been occupied for a while, you should be able to go on to the different rate authorities, whether it's Scotland, Wales, England, wherever you are, and I guess built property taxes in other countries too, and actually do a bit of research, find out what the property currently is. And quite often, not always, but quite often, you can dig around on that listing on the website and actually find out what the square meter rate is for that business space or the business rates. And bearing in mind, business rates is based on what they think you could rent that building out for on the date, whatever the date was of the assessment. Sometimes it's accurate, sometimes it's not, but whatever, that number, if you can ascertain what it is per square meter or per square foot or whatever, then it's going to allow you to start doing numbers based on what your future sizes and shapes of spaces are going to be, particularly if you're splitting it up into a multi-let and you're putting in quite a number of different, I guess, customers. So a CMO building, really, where those individual units could be rated separately because they're actually being occupied by independent businesses, and they each should really pay for their amount of space they use. And that data on those websites can be really actually quite handy for you to assess and use for when you're actually working out how much each of those units are going to be when you start subdividing. So it's not something that's going to be to do with purchase costs, although bear in mind, when you buy the building, the business rates will then be your responsibility until you have put in a new tenant. There are ways to support you through that. Some different authorities have different ways of dealing with that. Some of them, there's a rates reduction, a small amount that they take off because it's empty. Some of them are changing now so that it's actually quite a large amount you can take off, but only for a certain period of time, then you've got to pay all of it. Some of them will give you an incentive to redevelop the building. You know, there's lots of different things, lots of nuances is the word for that one. But it's definitely something to think about for your operational costs and your buying costs, for because from day one, you may start getting those bills coming in. Other ones to think about when you buy that building and you've not let it out is water. So that's another utility that whether come rain or shine, whether you're using water in the building or not, they will charge you for wastewater. Another little cost. I guess I'm going over into costs that are going to happen after you've bought the building, but it's useful to know them. I think I'm going to stop there on those, but it's just when you're doing that purchase and it's your first one, just remember VAT, what's happening with that. Land and buildings tax could be less than resi, might be slightly more depending on what the size is, but VAT does need to be included in that. Think about lawyer fees for both you and the bank. The various searches, title searches, they're not too expensive, but those things that have to be done on the day or the day or two before the transaction, perhaps getting an initial feasibility study done by an architect, there's going to be some fees associated with that. They're also, if you're going to get any of the mechanical and extract and heating and lighting and everything else looked at, generally the contractors I work with will go out and look at it because they may get the work, but you might have to pay someone. You might want to get out an actual mechanical extract engineer out to have a look and charge you for doing that. Another little cost. And I think some people do, especially on those first projects, kind of ignore the mechanical extract, air conditioning stuff. But, you know, with residential, you can, but in this line, you can't, particularly if you've got internal rooms, toilets, these sorts of things that don't have windows, they need mechanical extract. And that's a cost that's going to come up. So the element to think about here is just that initial feasibility. Accountant projections. So if you're going for bank funding or finance, you're probably going to need to pay someone to give you some good rubber stamping on your numbers. I mean, the irony is most of the time you're the one or we're the ones that end up doing the numbers, or at least giving the numbers. It's just they're beautified. That's rubber stamped and sent over in a nice bow from the accountant, so the bank can say, yep, we got a professional here to tell us and we can believe these figures. But it's a cost that you're going to have to pay. Survey, don't get two surveys done. Make sure you get it done by the bank that's going to potentially lend you the money instead of you doing it. Possible building survey there too, which the banks don't always ask for. That's more of the structural survey. International sale, if you're buying from overseas, even though it's in the UK, that might have some extra costs for you to legitimise that they own the property. Is there any finder's fees, agent's fees, of course. If you've had an agent working on your behalf trying to find the property or indeed negotiate on your behalf, there's going to be a fee there. There's the insurance on day one. And of course, any overruns on finance that you're going to have to pay for. So all of these add up to a reasonable chunk of change, and they sit on top of the bank loan, the finance and the deposit that you've calculated already. So actually it can be quite sizable, and you know, some of them do catch people unawares. So if you're just dealing with that first building and you're all excited about it, you may not have to pay all of these, but I just want to be frank, there are some costs there that I didn't really know about until I got started. And the one with VAT, the one that really still sticks in my throat from doing this first deal 20 years ago, was having to pay VAT on, sorry, having to pay land and buildings tax or stamp at the time on the VAT. I mean, it was crazy. I think it was 3% or 8%. I'll tell you what, it was a progressive thing. So it was 8%. So it went from 3% on £250,000, because it just was under the threshold, to going over the threshold, which is £250,000, up to, I can't remember what the VAT was, I think VAT was 17.5%, whatever it was. But basically, it went up to something like £280,000 or £290,000, whatever the number was. And I had to pay VAT on all of that. I had to pay land and buildings tax or stamp duty at the time on all of it. At 8%, it was crazy. So it just ended up being this big chunk of money for the state to go and blow on whatever it fancied as the next super thing to spend its money on. But anyway, just one of those things that you have to watch out for. So I hope that helps for those of you that are considering buying buildings. You're looking at it right now. We've maybe just timed this one right for you. If not, just park this episode. Make sure you keep it so that when you are going through that process, you can check out these this list, go through the numbers, make sure you get going into that deal with your eyes open. bear in mind there are those other podcasts that I mentioned before. I think if you go on the website and do a search for purchase or buying, I think they'll come up. But there's a Back to Basics one about after the purchase. There's another one which was once you've had the offer accepted, you know, what happens next, right? It's not necessarily about the money in that one. And then there was one other one I did, which was a checklist for when you actually get the keys. So this is all around the, we've done a deal, we've got a deal organized, we're going to go through the transaction, what happens just before, what are the costs, which is the gap, the one I hadn't done, and then what happens when you get the keys, what do you do next? So I hope that's given you a bit more meat on the bones. If there's anything else you'd like to, or I've missed out, and you're listening to this thinking, oh, I've been stung with this one, please let us know. We're not infallible. I don't know everything, that's for sure. And this is all just from our experiences so far. So if you have anything, do you know what? You need to add that to the list. Let us know. Or if you've got any questions or you've got any suggestions on other topics around this area or indeed any other areas around commercial that you would like us to explore, bring on an expert, talk through, then please reach out. You'll find me at jerryalexander.commercial, I think, on Instagram. You'll find me on LinkedIn under Jerry Alexander. And of course, in the show notes, there'll be some details about our website, Commercial Property Investor. And there, there'll be a, what do you call it, a form submission. You can submit whatever suggestions or questions that you have, and we will endeavour to get around to them. Of course, the other place is leave a review, and in the review, just say, could you maybe talk about this? Thanks for talking about that. Any feedback would be very welcome. All right, so I hope that's helped. I look forward to speaking to you again very soon. Catch you later.